is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Gallagher, girls varsity head coach at Magnificat High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinsling here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are one day delayed on our NBA
what day
episode.
What day is it? I thought it was because it was summer, Mike, and now you don't know what day of the week it is. That's why
I don't know what day of the week it is. Plus, you know, Memorial Day throws me off, so it could be Wednesday.
Tuesday. You had a nice slumber party last night, Mike. That's why.
I did. Slumber party in the living room with the family, so that's why we had to one of the reasons why we had to postpone. But nonetheless, we thought tonight might be a better night to be able to jump on here and talk NBA. We wrapped up a couple series tonight with the Atlanta Hawks moving on and the Philadelphia 76ers moving on. Last night, even if we had jumped down, we may not have finished in time to, well, I guess we could have reported the finish of the Lakers game probably in the first quarter, but the game wasn't officially over probably until we would have been long past our expiration date on the normal podcasting time, theoretically.
Yeah.
But anyway, we thought tonight would be a better night. We did wrap up two series. Like I said, it looks like the real Luka is going off. He just banged home.
Oh, my God.
His fifth three of the first quarter, and Dallas is currently up 10. So we're going to continue to look at that game. It'll probably be the last series that we talk about in any detail because probably an hour from now or so we'll have maybe a clearer picture of what's going to happen in this game. But certainly, if you're Dallas and Luka Doncic, you have to feel good.
Part of me hopes that it's a blowout, but part of me also hopes that it's a good game. And we'll talk about that game last night was so good. And I've been liking the basketball game. So I want a good game, even though I want Dallas to win. Right?
Well, we've had a lot of blowouts. We've had a lot of games, honestly, that haven't. After the first weekend, the first set of games on Saturday and Sunday of last week were outstanding. And then since then, we haven't really had a tremendous amount of great games.
It's been a lot of sloppy basketball, Mike. Lots of turnovers.
It just feels like there hasn't been very many close games. It feels like the series themselves, even the ones that are close, like the individual games necessarily haven't been that great. They've had big margin. Clearly, the Denver-Portland game last night was a huge aberration as far as that goes. Great game by both of those teams, and specifically by Dame and Jokic.
Yeah. Well, you ruined my segue, Mike, because I was trying to segue into our game for the night. And the turnovers.
Okay.
Tonight I have the most turnovers in playoff history. I have the list of the top 25. Now, I'm not expecting you to guess all 25, Mike. I want to be clear here. Let's
hope not. We don't have all we might have a little bit of time, but I don't know if we have that much time.
Although I will say I have to tell you what number 14 is, because I never would have expected this person's name to be on the list. Because it's, I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I could identify this person. Dennis Johnson.
You don't know DJ from the Boston Celtics and the Seattle Supersonics?
I mean,
DJ's in the Hall of Fame.
He's in the Hall of Fame, but he's number 14. So he's like up there.
Played a lot of playoff games for the Supersonics.
180 games.
Supersonics. And then the Celtics. So, yeah, a lot of
and
long
playoff
runs. And
the Suns in between,
runs.
Mike. The Suns in between, 81-83.
Yeah. True. Yeah, I forgot about his Suns era.
So when I saw that name, I was like, well, that's interesting. But it's not that interesting at the top. You know, like, obviously, it's going to be people that you can probably guess. I'm going to go ahead and let you go. Let's aim for the top five, Mike. We'll see how it goes. Aim for the top five.
Okay.
You don't have to give me in the order. You don't have to give me in the order. But I bet you can give me number one.
LeBron James.
Number one, LeBron James, yes.
I'm going to go Magic Johnson.
That's number two. Uh-oh.
I'm on fire. I think it gets a lot harder from this point on. Let's see. Karl Malone.
He's number nine.
All right, so in the top 10, that's not bad. So you got to figure Kobe Bryant.
He's number four.
All right, so I'm pretty good. I've been all in the top 10. Oh, man. Larry Bird?
He's 12.
All right, so out of the top 10, but still up there. Man. All right, let's see. Michael Jordan?
He's 10.
10. Okay. All right. So I still haven't guessed anybody outside of the top 12. So I feel like I'm doing pretty good. How many more do I need in the top five?
Two. So right now you have LeBron, one, Magic, two, Kobe, four.
Okay. Shaq?
Shaq is three.
All right. So I need one more to complete the top five. If I can get the top five and stay in the top 12, I'd say that's pretty good.
I agree.
Let's see. So we need somebody else who's had a lot of playoff runs. So I'm thinking about the San Antonio Spurs. And see, I don't know if Duncan handled the ball enough. Man. I'd either say it's got to be Duncan or Tony Parker. Let's go Duncan.
Duncan was five. Tony Parker was seven.
Okay. All right. I did pretty good.
The only two people you're missing in the top 10, Mike, do you want to take a guess? Do you want to hazard a guess?
Done.
Or you just
I'm
want
done.
To...
No, I'm done.
Okay,
man.
Well,
done.
I would. Okay, one played with your favorite player of all time.
Scottie Pippen.
Scottie Pippen is eight. Or six, I'm sorry. Scottie Pippen is six, Mike.
That makes sense. I mean, he had the ball in his hands a lot.
And then the other player played with your second favorite. Well, I don't know that he's your second favorite player of all time, but... He's the second greatest player of all time. It hit one of his teammates.
Dwayne Wade,
number eight.
Really? That's interesting, because I don't think of Wade as having played
games. He's by far the least amount of playoff games out of all these guys. He had 583 turnovers in 177 games. When you look at Duncan, okay, Duncan is the lowest ratio. He played 251 playoff games and only averaged 2.5 turnovers per game.
Yeah, I mean, figure Duncan has the ball. He's the least, you know, he's not creating necessarily the way these other guys have the ball in their hands 90% of the game. Duncan's catching the ball on the block and making decisions from there. So it makes sense.
So Duncan was Scottie Pippen played the least amount of games other than Dwayne Wade, and actually Magic Johnson only played 190 playoff games, and he had a lot of turnovers. But he also had, like LeBron, had the ball in his hand so many times.
Right,
so, you know,
probably those guys are probably the all-time leader in playoff assists too, if we want to pull up that list. It's probably like you think about a guy like Shaq who turns it over, who doesn't have the ball in his hands and certainly isn't, he's not an offensive creator per se. He's just a guy who's getting the ball in his hands and is maybe not making the best decisions always as a big man. So I guess Shaq, in a way, it's semi-surprising. But then when you think about just his style of play and the amount of double teams that he faced and all those kinds of things, and just, again, it sometimes just comes down to sheer numbers. If you've played whatever, you play 15 years in the league and you're making deep playoff runs every year, it just stands to reason that if you're, you're looking at total turnovers, whatever the numbers are when you're looking at totals.
I just want to point out the guy who's played the most, whoever's had the player who has like the second most playoff games and slash the most playoff losses, he's not in the top 25. Derek Fisher.
That's right, but Derek Fisher is a secondary player who's not, doesn't have the ball in his hands very much. So from that standpoint, it makes sense. It has to be a star player who has their hands on the ball a lot of the game.
What about Manu Ginobili? Would you call Manu Ginobili a star player?
I wouldn't say he's a star. I'd say he's
13. He's 13.
Yeah, I mean, he's a borderline. I mean, he's clearly a guy who had the ball in his hands a lot for the Spurs. And when the Spurs are going deep into the playoffs year after year after year after year, I mean, he's not a guy. He's not like Steve Kerr. He wasn't just a standstill, I'm just standing in the corner shooting threes and never putting the ball on the floor. I mean, Manu's a guy who's creative and trying to go and do things and make plays for himself and for others. So it makes sense that he's on that list for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I agree. All right.
All right. So we did pretty well on that. That's a win for me.
Like, I'm pretty impressed, I will say. I'm pretty impressed.
That's a win for me.
All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the games. We're going to start with the Nets and the Celtics. The Nets finished off the Celtics literally and figuratively last night. They knocked them out of the playoffs, and they subsequently knocked Danny Ainge out of his president's position, and now it seems like Brad Stevens will be moving to the president role, and they're going to be finding a new coach. Now, Mike, I don't know if you've read the what happened last night following the game. Have you read anything that happened following the game with Danny Ainge? Have you read anything?
I didn't get a chance to read any of the articles today. When I saw the news come across and I was scrolling through on my phone and saw that, and I didn't get a chance really to go in and read the articles and look at it other than to find out just the basic facts that Ainge was stepping down. I did read that he had been considering that or had been talking about it for 3 or 4 months, although I had never officially heard that reported. I heard people maybe speculating that that was something that could happen, but I never heard it officially talked about that Ainge himself was considering that. And then I heard, obviously the other part of the article and the other part of what I saw was that Stevens is moving up to the front office. So other than that, I don't know really much of the details. So you're going to have to fill me in on some of that stuff.
Okay. Well, here's what I want. Let's talk about the game before we talk about that. Sorry, to talk about in general, like what is your take on this, like the Celtics? What do they have to do to get back to a different level? Like what do the Celtics have to do, Mike?
Well, I think it goes back to a couple of things that we've talked about several times over the course of the podcast. I mean, I think you have two pieces that you're going to keep, and that's Tatum and Brown. And then everything else around those guys, I mean, Marcus Smart is probably the most obvious guy that you try to get rid of simply because his salary probably fits, and you could probably trade him away and get something back from him because he probably is a player that has value. I mean, the guy they really need to replace, it's sad to say, and I've been saying it, I just think Kemba Walker, even when Kemba is at his absolute best, I just think in the playoffs, if you're trying to win big, you just can't win with a guy who's 5'8" or 5'9". It's too easy to take that guy out of his game when you're that small. I don't care how good you are, when you're that small, it's just really, really difficult. But Kemba's going to make, I think he's making like, I want to say it's $37 million next year, maybe something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. Whatever he's making, it is a ridiculous number. So he's basically untradeable, at least untradeable in a sense of you're not going to get anything back of value. If you're totally rebuilding, then maybe you can, whatever, get a bad contract back and maybe attach a pick to it because Kemba's better than the guy that you're bringing back. But Boston's not in a position to want to do that. So I think the most viable thing for them to do is probably to figure out how they can package Marcus Smart with maybe one of their promising young players and see if you can get somebody in here that can help Tatum and Brown. But I don't know. I guess if Tatum takes a leap, I mean, does Tatum have another level that he can get to? I mean, is Tatum ever going to be one of the best five players in the league? What's your take on that?
I mean, he could be. I was a big believer in him, I want to say 2 years ago. And then, I don't know, you kind of talked me off of that ledge a little bit. I think he has the possibility, but the problem is I think he doesn't seem to have the leadership quality that you're going to want. Now, we could go back to 2005, 2006, 2007 LeBron and probably say the same thing, right? Would you agree with that? Like, I mean, LeBron was a better player than he is, okay? But I don't necessarily know. But I just don't think Tatum has that leadership quality. Like Kemba Walker has the leadership quality. He's just broke. Like, he's hurt all the time. He can't stay healthy. Like, I think Kemba has a much more alpha dog mentality than Tatum. Unfortunately, Kemba's body doesn't have an alpha dog persona, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree with that take or what.
Yeah, I think Kemba is a leader. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, I think he proved that in Charlotte. I think same thing in Boston. Teammates like him. I just don't think that he can be. I just don't think he can be a key piece of an NBA championship winning team. Now for Tatum, I look at him. And I think that he's a guy who potentially at some point could lead the league in scoring. But I think the thing that I'm not 100% sure on him is what can he do as a playmaker? When you think about the guys who are in the MVP discussion and guys who have won MVPs, you're talking about guys who not only can score, but you're talking about guys who can set up their teammates and make those teammates better by virtue of who they are as a player. And although Tatum is an unbelievable scorer, and I think he's only going to get better as a scorer, and I will not be surprised at all if he wins multiple scoring titles over the course of his career, I'm not 100% sure that he's ever going to be a top five player in the league because I don't know that his ability to set up other players and pass the ball is on par with a LeBron, with a Luka, with a Jokic, even with a guy like Giannis, who we don't necessarily think of Giannis as a tremendous passer, but Giannis is a guy that's gotten better throughout his career. I think he's always had a willingness to pass, whereas I think Tatum is wired like a scorer. Like I equate Tatum that maybe he's the evolutionary Carmelo, in that Carmelo in his heyday, and I've said it on the podcast a bunch of times, that when Carmelo was at his best, I don't think there's anybody I would have rather just given the ball to in the last 10 seconds and said, hey, go get me a basket. Now, this is in the everybody's got to shoot threes and all that stuff. I'm talking 10 years ago when Denver Nuggets era, Carmelo Anthony, there was nobody better in the last 5 or 10 seconds because he could just get you a shot in so many different ways. And I think in a lot of ways, Tatum is a lot like Carmelo, and with the three-point shot, which just kind of fits in today's game. But I'm not sure either one of them as a passer.
Oh, come on. I think Carmelo is a better player than Tatum in the long. I think legacy career-wise, we're going to remember Carmelo more than we're going to remember Tatum.
Carmelo's a better rebounder. I think they're probably similar as passers. I think that Tatum is probably a better defensive player than Carmelo was or ever has been.
But so I'm saying in the history books, who's going to be remembered more, Carmelo or Tatum?
It's a fair question because what you're having to do is if you're going to say Tatum, which I'm not saying I am, but if you're going to say Tatum, you have to project out another 10 or 12 years of unbelievable production from Jason Tatum. And you're also saying if you're going to say Tatum is going to be better, you're talking about Carmelo's all-time top 10 in scoring in the league. So I guess what you're counting on if you're going to say Tatum is going to be better, you're going to say that he's going to win multiple titles, or at least he's going to win an NBA championship, and he's going to put up some unbelievable career numbers. Now, that's a long leap. You're talking about 10 more years at least of all-star level production. The odds of that happening, I'd say, are probably fairly low, whether it's just from injury, from whatever, father time, from his, maybe he doesn't progress the way you think he's going to. Is the potential there for him to be as good or maybe even better than Carmelo if you think about him winning an NBA championship? I think the potential is there, but it's a long stretch to say that he's going to be better than Carmelo.
I'm saying zero chance. Zero chance.
I mean, if I was a betting man, I would definitely bet on Carmelo having the better career than Jason Tatum. Well, and the other thing
too, I have to say, like, yeah, that's it.
But Tatum has a lot more years ahead of him for the Celtics to build a team around him where they win a title. And you know that if he wins a title, that elevates him in the eyes of many people in NBA circles. So it's possible. But again, like I said, you're talking about 10 years of extraordinary production between where Carmelo is now and where Jason Tatum needs to go to even be in the conversation with Carmelo. So,
yeah. Okay.
Long way to go. I'd bet on Carmelo.
Yep. All right. So moving on from that, let's talk Nets. Nets Bucks. I think that's where we can go from there. I don't think we need to spend any time about how the Nets destroyed them. Like, obviously, Kyrie came out to play those last two games. They're a really good team. And
can we talk Kyrie for a second? Do you care
for
a second?
No, sure. We can talk
Kyrie. What's your take on him stomping on or rubbing his foot on the leprechaun's head? What's your take on that?
Listen, T.O. did it.
What does that mean? So that's your barometer for good quality player behavior?
Listen, I don't think it's personally.
I'm asking you, what's your honest feeling?
My honest opinion is I don't really care. I don't think it matters. It's a piece of wood, and I know it's the Celtics logo, but
I don't even care that it's a Celtics logo. It's just a goon move. It's a goon move. Just win the game. Just win the game and move on, man. Why do you have to do, like, you're a guy who doesn't want to talk to the media, doesn't want all this scrutiny, says there are more important things in the world. You're all this and that. And then you have to go and step on a leprechaun's face. Like, I know that stepping on the leprechaun's face in and of itself, like, I guess I'm of the same mindset as you. I don't really care. But, like, it's dumb. It's just like, why? What's the point of doing it? Like, it's not
to get a water bottle thrown at your face.
What is he trying to accomplish there? What is he trying to accomplish? Like, does he think people aren't going to see that? Does he think that nobody's going to ask him about it? He doesn't want to answer questions about basketball frequently. Now he wants to answer questions about him rubbing his foot on the leprechaun's face. It's a goon move, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Oh, well. And he's really good at basketball. That's all I'll say.
Anyways, really good at basketball, but that's I mean, whatever, dude. I don't know.
Okay. It's a fair point. It's a fair point, Mr. Making. All right. Nets Bucks. Okay. So we are now going to discuss the Nets Bucks. They are the only series that is set right now, right? There's no other series that's set. Although I think
we still don't have anything set. Nothing's going to be set in the West. And, well, no, we have Atlanta. We have Atlanta, Philly,
yeah, I guess the whole East is set.
The East is done.
East is done. So let's talk Bucks Nets. And you and I have aligned with people that we don't necessarily always agree with. I sent you, there's a link. Draymond Green believes that the Nets are going to win the East, and Charles Barkley believes that the Bucks are going to win the East, Mike. So, well, I don't know. Based on Chuck's betting history,
I don't know if I feel good about either of those people picking a team.
Based on Chuck's betting history, I like my chances right now. So, here's the thing. I think this is going to be a good series. I think this is going to be a 6-7 game series. I think that there's going to be games where we're going to be like, oh, this, what's going on here? Like, why is this happening? I think there's zero chance this is a sweep. I think this is zero chance this is 4-1. This has to be a 6 or a 7 game series. And I'm sticking with them. I've been riding them until I'm going to ride them until the sunset, until they've been eliminated. And I told you that I was going to do that because on paper, they are the best team. On paper. I did not say we don't know what's going to happen as far as Kyrie taking a sabbatical or stomping on a real leprechaun's face and then getting suspended or something like that. We don't know what's going to happen, but on paper, I have to take the Nets. So I'm going to take the Nets. I know you're going to take the Bucks. So you counterpoint my argument. Go.
All right. So let's, which side of the ball do you want to approach it from first? Who has the ball?
You go for it. You go whatever
tell,
you want to go.
Tell me which team has the ball, and then I'll make my argument that way, and then I'll make the second argument.
Who's got the ball? Go with the Bucks.
Okay.
Go with the Bucks.
All right, so the Bucks have the ball. All right. So who are you starting if you're Brooklyn? Who's your fifth starter?
Well,
Who are you starting against Milwaukee?
I would probably start. They started Blake the last few games, right? Blake.
Okay. All right, so you're gonna start Blake. All right, you're gonna start Blake. All right, so who's your match? So who's your matchups? Let's go through the matchups. Durant is guarding Giannis, right?
Yeah.
All right, so Giannis had 49 the last time they played.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Last time they played, did Durant play?
Yeah, he did because Durant had like 40.
Okay.
I don't think Brooklyn has anybody that can really contend with Giannis. So that's my first point. All right. Secondly, who's guarding Jrue Holiday?
Probably Kyrie or Harden. One of the two.
All right. Well, Mike, tell me who is it?
If you're Steve Nash, we'll go with Harden. We'll go with Harden.
All right. So Harden at least physically matches up with Jrue Holiday, but let's rate James Harden's defensive capabilities. 1 to 10. Where do you put James Harden as a defender?
4.
Okay. So Jrue Holiday's a pretty good offensive player. So I think Jrue Holiday is going to be able to do some stuff offensively. All right. Who's guarding Middleton?
Well, who's left?
Joe Harris, Blake, Kyrie.
Well, no, Blake's gonna have to guard the big. So,
how's that Brook Lopez Blake Griffin matchup looking down on the block for you?
Does Brook Lopez play at the block?
He does a little bit now. He's playing a lot more at the block this year than he did in years past when he's been with Milwaukee. He's been down catching the ball around the rim a lot more than he was. If this would have been last year or especially 2 years ago where he just was standing outside the three-point line, then for sure. But I think he's been down on the block doing a lot more work down in his office than he has in the past. Blake Griffin can't guard Brook Lopez in the post. Just my opinion. All right, so let's keep going. Who's guarding Middleton?
It has to be Kyrie. Or Joe Harris. Who's Milwaukee's fifth starter?
Connaughton's probably your fifth starter.
Okay, well, Pat Connaughton's got to be guarded by Kyrie then, and Joe Harris has got to be guarded by Middleton.
Okay. Do you like the Joe Harris-Chris Middleton matchup?
Do I like it? No, but...
Okay. All right, so what defensive matchups do you like for
Mike, I don't
Brooklyn?
Care about defense.
Well, look,
for the
listen,
Nets, we don't
listen,
care about
you,
defense.
You told me Milwaukee had the ball, so we're going through these points here. So, defensive matchup do you like for the Nets? Which
I don't
matchup
like,
do you
I don't
think?
Like any matchup.
Okay, good. We've established that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, look, I don't think Milwaukee individually, like we've been through this before, like Milwaukee clearly is not a perfect offensive team. Their best player, their superstar, is not give the guy the ball and get out of the way and just let him go to work because he has a mismatch. Now, that being said, if Giannis doesn't really have anybody that can provide him with a ton of resistance, which look, if Durant's locked in, can Durant be a credible matchup for Giannis? Certainly. I think Giannis is stronger. I think Giannis is going to want to play more inside. I think you're going to see Giannis set a lot of ball screens in that series and roll to the basket where you take advantage of the fact that Brooklyn overall is a defensive team and rotations and being on the weak side and all those things. I just think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough for Brooklyn to deal with Milwaukee offensively, because Milwaukee can do a lot of different things, and there's no real great matchups for Brooklyn. And I agree. I think at every position, when Milwaukee has the ball, that there's ways for them to attack every individual defender that Brooklyn can throw at Milwaukee. And then I like Milwaukee's bench. I like what they can do offensively. I mean, Forbes can really shoot it. Now, we'll talk about the other end where he may be a little bit more of a liability. Bobby Portis has been playing really, really well. PJ Tucker doesn't give you much offensively, but he can still stand in the corner, and he's enough of a credible threat that I think they have to guard him. So I just think Milwaukee can do lots of things on offense that the other teams that Brooklyn might face can't do. All right, let's flip it around quickly. So now Brooklyn has the ball. Okay, so let's go through the matchups. Durant, Giannis guards Durant, right?
Yeah. So I think it's a wash.
Look, if there's ever a guy that's equipped to at least look, nobody's going to stop Durant. I mean, Durant is clearly probably one of the top five offensive players maybe in the history of the game. So is anybody going to stop him? No. But if you were going to design a guy to guard Durant, like Giannis would probably be the guy. Long, fast, athletic, strong, all the things that you would want. So as much as you possibly could want to have somebody, it's still Durant probably still gets his, but Giannis at least makes him work. Jrue Holiday, where do you put Jrue Holiday? Do you put him on Harden?
I think they have to put him on Kyrie, because
Or do you put him on Kyrie and just say, hey, Jrue Holiday's bigger than him, he's stronger than him, he's gonna lock him up, and we're gonna try to quote take Kyrie out of the game. Now
I think that's where you have to go.
Can you completely take Kyrie out? I mean, he's too good. I don't think you're gonna completely take him out, but maybe you can, maybe if it's a 7-game series, Jrue Holiday takes Kyrie out of two of those games where Kyrie is kind of a non-factor. So I think the question becomes, where does Middleton, what do you do with Middleton? Because can Middleton guard Harden? Or would you rather have Middleton chasing Kyrie? Do you want Middleton on Joe Harris to take Joe Harris away? I think you want your big three, if you're Milwaukee, on that big three from Brooklyn. I kind of think I might go Jrue Holiday on Harden.
Listen, Mike, I know exactly this is where we're going to end up. We're going to end up with, you feel way better about Milwaukee than you do Brooklyn. That's what you're getting right? That's the point you're going to make.
No, it's not necessarily true. It's not necessarily true. Look, Brooklyn is an all-time juggernaut offensively, and I think we saw bits and pieces of what they could be in this Celtics series. I mean, I think the question becomes, and I'm still, you know, I'm dubious of their ability to mentally fight through if and when adversity hits. I just think Milwaukee is probably they're the most equipped of any team remaining in the playoffs to be able to deal with Brooklyn offensively. And in order to do that, they don't have to sacrifice what they can do on offense. And that's where I think Milwaukee's advantage lies, is that they can play a lineup that is good defensively, that can make Brooklyn at least work, and they're not sacrificing offense. So that's my case for Milwaukee winning. Now, does that mean that they're going to win? Does that mean that I think it's a foregone conclusion? Absolutely not. If Brooklyn wins this series, I will not be surprised in the least, but I think Milwaukee is well equipped to give them as much difficulty on the one end of the floor where they are strongest, more so than any other team in the league. And that's where I'll leave it.
Okay. So who are you going to pick? Do we want to pick here? We should pick who wins the series.
Milwaukee, I'm picking Brooklyn. Series.
I'm picking Brooklyn. How many games?
Milwaukee in six.
I have Brooklyn in six. There we go. Okay. All right.
Fair enough.
All right. We're going to quickly go to the other Eastern Conference team that won yet today. It would be the Atlanta Hawks. Man, the Knickerbockers. They went to true Knickerbocker fandom. They did exactly what they've done for years and years and years. Choked it away. They stunk. Randall stunk. When Derrick Rose is your best player in a series, you're not winning a playoff series. Sorry, Derrick Rose. No offense. Congrats, Hawks. Trae Young, he's the real deal. And I'm telling you now, Mike, I'm saying it right now. You know. Obviously, Philly ended their series tonight too. If I'm Philly, I'm not excited about this with Embiid's injury, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Because the Hawks could potentially, I can't believe I'm about to utter these words, Mike. Pending Embiid's situation, the Hawks aren't out of the series, have a chance to win the series. I truly believe that at this point. I truly believe that. I'm not saying they're going to, but they have a chance to. I would not want to play the Hawks right now. Your take. Or was it just the Knicks were that bad and it made the Hawks look really good?
Okay, so let's address the Knicks-Hawks thing first. So one, the Knicks were really bad. I mean, they were really bad. Your best player who he might end up being second team All-NBA, he was, I'm going to just, let's be kind to him and say that he was mediocre in this series. And that's probably giving him too much credit. Certainly when he's your number one guy, which he clearly was throughout the season. I mean, without question, he was their best player and he was one of the best 15 players in the league this year. And he did not in any way, shape, or form play to that level in the playoffs. And then what you saw as a result of that was that the rest of their team, without him to play off of, was exposed as being very, very, very mediocre. And the Knicks just did not play well, and it was led by Randall. And they just didn't put up much of a fight against the Hawks. Now, conversely, when you talk Atlanta, you talk about what Trae Young was able to do. And look, he was 10 for 28 tonight. It's not like he shot the lights out. And yet, if you watch that game, he just carried himself with an air of like, look, we're not losing this game. Like, I'm not intimidated by being in Madison Square Garden. In fact, I'm going to embrace the crowd and I'm going to ask for more noise and I'm going to shush him and all the things that he did. And there were some questions about Trae Young. I'll admit, I had questions about Trae Young coming into his first playoff series and whether or not he was going to be able to show that he could do it. And I go back to game one when I texted you before the last play and I said, look, Trae Young's going to win this game. I just felt it. And sure enough, you know, he knocked in that little floater in the lane and Atlanta wins game one. Atlanta's got some talented guys. Like Capella is playing really, really, really well. That guy is showing, I think, that he's much more than sort of the perception of him in Houston was that he's just a lob dunker. And he's proven himself to be a lot more than that. He's been really good defensively, blocking shots, being in the right place. DeAndre Hunter, who you and I, and especially me, was very low on coming out of the draft. I thought he was kind of stiff and I didn't know what he'd ever be offensively. He's been really good in this series. John Collins has been probably below what his regular season production has been, but we know he's a talented player. Bogdanovich is not afraid of anybody. And that dude, he'll go at you offensively. He'll go at you defensively. He's a good, good playoff player. And then, I don't know, I just think Atlanta has a chance. Do they have a chance if Embiid is fully healthy? No. But what does that mean? It means they have a chance because Embiid's not going to be fully healthy either from this injury or his history tells you from some other injury. And Philly fans, I would be very, very nervous to think that Joel Embiid is going to make it through three more playoff rounds and be completely healthy and be at his best. I don't see it. I don't see it. Now, can Atlanta win this series? I don't know. I think Philly is pretty well equipped to be able to make life very difficult for Trae Young. When you think about if Philly says, okay, Trae Young's the head of the snake, we're going to cut off the head of the snake and make everybody else beat us. So you throw 48 minutes of Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle on Trae Young. You're going to put the ball in the hands of all these other guys from Atlanta and say, hey, beat us. Now, could they? I like their supporting cast maybe more than I thought I would coming into the playoffs. But I'm not sure that if they take Trae Young out of the game with Thybulle and Ben Simmons, I'm not sure the rest of this Atlanta roster is talented enough to win it. And yet at the same time, part of me says Trae Young might figure out a way to get his after what I saw in this series against the Knicks. Maybe he's better than we think, and maybe he's going to get his no matter what you throw at him. So I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, here's my thing. I think Trae Young can do that. I don't know that he's quite to that point yet where no matter what the defense throws at him, that they're going to make – that he's going to be able to figure something out. He's so – like, I keep bringing up his size. He's so small. I just don't think he has the ability to, like – to care, I don't think that he has a carry. Now, if Embiid's not healthy, Mike, and doesn't play in several games in this series, there's a very good chance Atlanta comes out of it because I just think there's going to be some problems. You could even see tonight, you know, I know they ended up winning by like 20, but Washington was hanging around, at least in the first three quarters, and then they kind of blew it out of the water. Like, and Washington was a shell of themselves, too. They had lost two players, so... If I'm a Philly fan, I don't feel good right now. I don't feel good because the only thing that I take a little bit of solace in is if you can get through the series and maybe Embiid doesn't play in the series at all and he rests and they have him ready and fresh for that next series, because that other series is going to definitely go, like we said, we're predicting six games. I don't think there's any way it doesn't go six games. Like you somehow get through it and those two teams beat each other up. Maybe they play a few overtime games or whatever, and you can get through it, and then you have a chance. But I truly believe whoever comes out of that Nets-Bucks series is going to be the Eastern Conference champion. I think whoever wins that is the better team. There's no question in my mind at this point.
All right, I'll echo that. I'll take it one step further. I think whichever one of those teams wins that series wins the NBA title. I really think those are the two best teams. Those are the two best teams. I think Milwaukee is the best team offensively and defensively. I think they're the most balanced. The question is, can that balance beat Brooklyn's just juggernaut of an offense? And we're going to find out.
Yep.
On the Atlanta thing, I think two points here that I want to make, and then we can move on. I think if Joel Embiid plays less than half of the games that are played in this series, I think Atlanta wins it. So if it's a seven-game series and Joel Embiid plays in three games and sits out four, I think the Hawks come out. I don't think that Philly can beat the Hawks without Embiid. So Embiid's got to play. And then number two, I think when you talk about Trae Young, and I talked about it a little bit with Kemba Walker, that, hey, a small guy just can't be the guy that is your alpha and is a guy that you're counting on because you can game plan around him. And the difference, though, is Trae Young's a small guy, but he's not as small as Kemba Walker. So Trae Young is maybe 6'2". Kemba Walker's 5'8", 5'9". So that's still a 4 or 5 inch difference. And the other thing with Trae Young is he does such a good job of drawing fouls. And you can say what you want about him, what you want about James Harden. Guys who know how to draw fouls, that's a skill. Like if you've ever played pickup basketball or basketball in general, there are some guys that just have a knack for being able to use their body in such a way that they're able to draw fouls. And James Harden is one of those guys, and Trae Young is one of those guys. And so when he gets inside, even though he's small, he may not finish every shot, but he just has a knack for being able to draw fouls on guys. Tonight he went to the line 15 times. I mean, there are very few guys in the league at any given time that are even capable of getting to the line 15 times in a game. And we know Trae Young's a really good shooter. He went 13 for 15 tonight. So he's going to make his free throws. And that's, I think, what's going to continue to make him effective as a playoff player is the fact that he can get to the line. So can Atlanta win and beat a full-strength Philadelphia 76ers squad with Joel Embiid going at full tilt? I don't think so. If Embiid misses games or he's playing at some lower percentage of himself, I don't think they can. I think Atlanta can win. If he's at full throttle, I don't think Atlanta can beat him. I think Philly moves on. But I do think that whoever wins that Nets-Bucks series is going to take care of Philly fairly easily, even if Embiid's healthy. I just think those two teams are better.
Okay, I'm agreeing. All right, Mike. With that, we've wrapping up the East for now. We're going to turn our attention to the West. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit snapraise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time. Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
All right, we are back to talk Western Conference, and we don't have as much information, and we're not as far with the Western Conference because there's not as much set in stone. What we can say is right now, I feel very certain, Jazz are up 30 points on the Grizzlies. I'm very sad about that. I like the Grizzlies a lot. The Jazz are up by 30 on the Grizzlies with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. There's zero chance the Grizzlies come back. So the Jazz are going to move on. Who the Jazz are going to play, obviously, is up in the air. But congrats to the Jazz. They figured it out. They're just shooting. They're all of a sudden shooting lights out. The last three games, I know they had 19 threes 2 games ago. I think they had 17 last time. And tonight they are a grand total of
14 of 35.
Yeah, that's 41%. Pretty good. Pretty good. And Jordan Clarkson's missed six of those. So he played really well the other night. Donovan Mitchell seems to be, he only played 22 minutes tonight and he has 28 points. So, and he's not seeing the floor the rest of the game if they're smart, I would guess. So anyways, so congrats to the Jazz. Grizzlies build off this next year. I think that's a huge thing for them. They got this experience. Obviously they were a year ahead of schedule. They fought through the play-in games. And here they are. So congrats to them. They won a game, and they should be very proud of the fact that they won a game against the number one seed and just build off that in the future. But anything to add about those two teams, Mike?
Memphis needs one more guy. I mean, they need one more star, and they need Jaren Jackson to get back to his pre-injury levels and continue to progress as a stretch four, or maybe he's going to end up being a stretch five. I don't know where he ultimately ends up, but you've got Valanciunas there. They need one more guy. Morant's going to continue to get better. I don't think there's any doubt that at some point in the next 5 years, he's going to become one of the best 10 to 15 players in the league. He's got to continue to develop his shot, but his passing is otherworldly. His athleticism is fantastic, and I think he's got the right mentality. This team has so many guys that are solid pros, guys that play hard, and they're just going to need to grab one or two more premier players to be able to develop in order to get them to where they want to go in the Western Conference. I mean, if that team's in the East, you know, they're probably, you know, they're right in there with the Knicks and the Hawks as far as teams that, you know, fought for the 4 and 5 seed in the East. But they're still one guy away, along with the continued development of Morant and Jaren Jackson. And on the Utah side, I mean, they beat Memphis, who I think probably of all the Western Conference, you look at all the series, Memphis was clearly, if you could handpick any opponent, Memphis was the team that every team in the West would have chosen to play. But Utah takes care of business. They get Donovan Mitchell back healthy. I think the strength of Utah compared to years past is they don't rely as much on Mitchell's ability to produce offense. They have other guys now that can score. I think Conley is another guy now who can attack and score a little bit off the dribble. which is an element that they didn't have before his arrival. And they didn't have it last year in the bubble when Conley was not playing to the same level. So Utah is obviously sitting there, and they're going to get the winner of this Dallas Clippers series, which right now is tied 2-2, and Dallas is up 2 at the half as we record this. So who knows what's going to happen in the rest of this game, what's going to happen in this series. But regardless of which one of those teams comes out of there, Utah is going to be a formidable opponent for either the Clippers or the Nuggets. And until we know who that's going to be, I don't think we need to speculate or start talking about Utah versus the Clippers or Utah versus the Mavs. Let's just give Utah credit for moving on to the second round, and they're going to sit and wait till this series is over.
Yep, I agree. All right, so now we're going to move to the games that aren't currently happening. Although I guess, Mike, I think we probably, well, we'll talk about the games that are happening tomorrow night, and then we'll come back to the Clippers Mavs and see if we've gotten any further. It's currently halftime in the Clippers and Mavs game with the Mavs up 2. We're going to start with Portland and Denver. And I know you were very sad last night because you don't have NBA TV. But man, was that a ball game. I enjoyed every second of it. Every single time it looked like Portland was going to lose, Dame pulled him out of the, you know, proverbial grave site. Like, he just pulled it out. Like, just absolutely. He made 2 threes that were absolutely ridiculous. Like, I bet you, like, there's no way he actually thought, he probably did think those shots were going in, but They were so bad, man. He's a bad man. And then they lost it. I was really sad, but this has just been such a good series. I'm excited for you tomorrow night. You'll be able to watch it because it's on TNT. Jokic had a great game. Porter came out. Michael Porter Jr. came out and had a great game yesterday. I like both of these teams a lot. I'm sad that one of them is going to have to go. I think there's zero chance this doesn't go 7 games. I think Portland wins tomorrow night. This is going to go 7. We need a compelling game 7. So I'm going to say Portland wins tomorrow night. And then we're going to get to see what's happening. And Draymond just beat Kenny Smith to the board. I don't know if you saw that. But anyways.
That was a big race. Big race for those two.
Big race. Well, Kenny wasn't there yesterday, and Draymond
we couldn't get Shaq and Barkley involved in this. Come on.
Well, Shaq and Draymond raced the board yesterday, and
where's Draymond Chuck? How come Chuck's not there tonight?
And they may be taking they're rotating days off. But anyways, Draymond ran to the board and back to the desk before Shaq got to the board like yesterday. I'm pretty sure. Anyways, regardless, and that was the I think that must be the joke, because obviously we're listening with it or watching with it muted. They're probably joking about yesterday how because Kenny wasn't there yesterday. They've got to be rotating him in. Like, I'll be honest with you, Mike, I'm not a huge Draymond fan. But I know this is really off topic right now. Sorry. But Draymond is going to be a great guy for this kind of a show when he retires. I really genuinely believe that. I think
I agree. He's been good. What I've seen of him, he's been good. And I think he's opinionated. And he's a guy who's not going to be afraid to say what he thinks, which is what you need in order to have success.
He's not going to be afraid. Anyways, going back to what I was saying, I definitely think this is a 7-game series. And I'm excited to see what transpires tomorrow night. Your take.
All right, a couple takes. One, Dame Lillard. I don't know how anybody can be surprised at all that he makes these shots over and over and over again. I don't know if there's any guy in the league that you could trust more in those situations when you need a three to be able to get the shot off. I mean, I just don't think there's anybody that's going to come through with a more clutch shot. If you're Mike Malone, interesting that you were put into that position. What, 3 times? And none of the times did he choose to foul. Now, I'm not saying that I would or wouldn't foul in that situation, because I think you always run the risk of, if you go to foul, that you're going to foul and maybe give up a 4-point play because you foul weakly, or you're going to give up 3 free throws. But it just seems like it was kind of a foregone conclusion that Dame was going to make those shots. I mean, I know they're crazy shots, but I mean, nobody's surprised that they go in. And then my second Portland take is, the shame of it is that Dame gets 55. He shoots 12 for 17 on threes. And you don't win. And the rest of that roster, I mean, Nurkic fouled out in what? I think he played 24 minutes, something like that. And
he had two. I know you weren't watching it. He had two really dumb fouls, and they were right back to back. The third and his fourth fouls, or his fourth and his fifth. They were really dumb fouls, and then he just made a really dumb mistake on the sixth foul. He should have never fouled the guy. He should have just had to let him have the layup. Like, he is so critical. The rest of the game, Mike, you had Carmelo and Robert Covington guarding Jokic. Now, I will say this. Both of those guys, considering their deficiencies on having to guard Jokic, and Covington's a good defender, but he's also like 8 inches shorter than Jokic. Carmelo surprisingly did a good job. I think Carmelo forced two turnovers on Jokic. But I don't know. I just think Nurkic screwed that up. It's his fault. It's 100% his fault they were put in that position, because the sixth foul that he had was so dumb. He should have just let guy get the layup instead of fouling him.
Well, and the thing is that if you're going to guard Jokic with at least Nurkic, you can delude yourself into thinking that at least he can play him one-on-one. When you're trying to guard Jokic with Carmelo or with Robert Covington, you almost have to send a double. And when you send a double, Jokic is going to find the right guy. And that the three from Michael Porter in the second overtime that basically ended up being the winning margin, like that play, Jokic has the ball in the post. They come and they bring a double team, and Jokic somehow just reads it and finds Michael Porter in the corner, and he bangs home the three. I mean, Jokic is just a great, great, great passer. And we've been saying it over and over and over again since 2 years ago when Jokic first gets in the playoffs with the Nuggets. And he doesn't look like he'd be a go-to scorer. He doesn't look like he'd be a guy that plays in the clutch. He doesn't look like a guy that you could just give the ball to and he's going to get you buckets. But we've now seen three straight playoff runs where he's exactly that guy that you don't think he is. And he has 38 last night, and obviously it pales in comparison to Dame's 55. And so people aren't necessarily talking about it, but man, Jokic offensively at his size and what he can do, I mean, he can shoot threes, he can put the ball on the floor, he can post you up. And then if you try to take away any of the things that he can do as an individual offensive player, he's not just one of the best passing big men in the game, he's one of the best passers in the game. I mean, I think it's him, LeBron, and Luka are the three guys who just see things that other guys don't see and just anticipate passes that other guys don't anticipate. And when you have that kind of a guy who also has the ability to score the way Jokic does, I mean, it's pretty impressive. And I think this series comes down to both teams' role players, both teams' rosters are a little bit weakened. Obviously, the Jamal Murray injury, and then you also have Will Barton, who's been out for the Nuggets. So Denver's supporting cast isn't the best. And you look at Portland's supporting cast, and, you know, I mean, they haven't played particularly well around Dame either. So I think this series is going to come down to, look, we know that Lillard and Jokic are going to show up for game six. I think a game comes down to which one of the supporting casts plays better. And if Denver's supporting cast plays better, they'll win, even though the game's in Portland. And if Portland's supporting cast plays better, they'll win. Because I think you know what you're going to get out of Dame and Jokic. I mean, you don't know you're going to get 55 and 38, but you know those guys are going to put up big numbers and do what they need to do in order to help their team win. It's just going to be a question of, is Monte Morris going to make shots, or is Robert Covington? Is Nurkic going to play well, or is Austin Rivers going to have a good game? And whichever one of those supporting casts play better, I think is who wins. I think it's probably going to go seven. I think Portland probably gets game six. And then I think Denver wins it in seven.
Yep. Okay. That's fair. Completely fair. All right. The other series tomorrow, the Lakers and the Suns. Mike, I think the Lakers are going off into the sunset. If AD doesn't play, they don't win tomorrow and it's over. Right?
Well, Father Time, is Father Time going to win? If Father Time doesn't win, can LeBron put up two 40-point games in Game 6 and Game 7? Can he do that? Is that
enough? Is a 40-point game from LeBron enough with the rest of the roster right now? I mean,
I think if LeBron puts up 40, if he puts up 40 plus and he's on his game, that means he's not only going to be on his game, but he's also going to be on his game of inspiring and motivating and yelling at and pushing his other guys to play better. I think last night was a perfect barometer of LeBron, and I don't want to say, I don't know, shortcoming sounds wrong, but like LeBron was slightly disengaged in that game, and even slightly disengaged LeBron had what, 24, and I don't know what his assist and rebound totals were, but I'm sure they were decent. And for any other player in the league, you're like, oh man, that's a great game. But you watch LeBron and he did not put his imprint on that game in any way, shape, or form. And we've seen it too many times in Cleveland where he does put his imprint on the game and you just feel him. Even if his team loses, like he's trying to will his team to victory. And last night it was like he was resigned to the fact that they were going to lose that game for whatever reason. And I know that it's not I just don't think it's one of the things that I don't like about LeBron is that he picks and chooses his spots. And maybe you can say it's smart, that why bust your tail in that game where Phoenix is at home, felt like they were going to probably win that game, even if LeBron has a great game. Save yourself for game 6 when maybe Davis comes back and it's a home game, and then you throw yourself into a game 7 where you have a better chance to win. So maybe it's smart, but I don't know. I just know that there are times where LeBron's not at full throttle, and I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. Like, I think you got to be in full throttle, and he wasn't in full throttle in that game. And look, credit to Phoenix. I think the biggest revelation in this series has been DeAndre Ayton and how good he's been at both ends of the floor. Offensively, I mean, he's been terrific, screening, rolling hard to the rim, getting lobs, making plays around the rim. His rebounding, I think, has been way better than it's been even in the first couple regular seasons of his career. He's been really, really good. And I think that's made all the difference. I think that was the big question mark people had with Phoenix coming in. I mean, I think you knew what you were getting out of Chris Paul if he was healthy. I think people expected Booker to play well. And then you had all the role players from, you know, Bridges to Cam Johnson, Cam Payne. There was a little bit too much Cam Payne at moments in that game, especially in the first half. There was one stretch where Cam Payne came down. I think he shot the ball like 3 out of 4 possessions where nobody else touched the ball. And he might have scored on 2 of them. But I was like, man, this is a lot of Cam.
He was on fire, man.
Yeah, this is a lot of Cam Payne in this game that I'm not sure that I'd want this much of that. But anyway, regardless, I think Ayton was the big question mark. And he's clearly answered that. So moving forward, regardless of what happens in this series, I think if you're Phoenix, you've got to feel now like you've got, hey, we've got Booker and Chris Paul's getting old. And who knows, he's going to be a free agent. Maybe he leaves, maybe he doesn't. I don't know what he's going to do. But you now can feel pretty good that you have Booker and Ayton as your two cornerstones moving forward. And I mean, if AD doesn't play, I don't think LeBron can conjure up enough to get them to a game 7. I just don't. And I think that the LeBron of 3, 4, 5 years ago might have been able to pull that off. I don't think that this LeBron, I don't think he has that in him, whether that's because of age, whether that's because of the ankle sprain, whether that's because the rest of that group isn't up to par and can't reach the level that LeBron needs them to reach. If Davis doesn't play, I think Phoenix wins game 6.
Yeah, that's kind of what I feel too. I think that Davis doesn't play. And I hope I'm wrong. I really do, but if Davis doesn't play, I don't think there's any way the Lakers win. And we'll just have to see. And hats off to the Suns. You know, you can only play the people that the other team puts on the floor, right? You can't control someone getting injured. And like we've seen with Chris Paul, I think every time he goes down, I think he's acting like he's getting shot now, by the way. Like, come on, Chris Paul, relax a little bit. Like, I know your shoulder's bothering you or whatever, but yesterday it was a little bit dramatic. And why he was in the game with a up 30 points, I don't understand that one either. Like, come on now. Like, why is he out there? But regardless.
Yeah, that was strange. I agree.
Like, whatever. I think there's no chance that the Lakers win if AD doesn't play. So I'm in agreement. All right, Mike. Moving on to the last game, which is going on right now. Series is tied 2-2. Oh, Boban. Oh, anyway, Boban just missed a dunk, but he got fouled.
Well, that wasn't technically a dunk.
I know. Well, it kind of, he tried to look like he was trying to dunk.
He tried to throw it down into the rim from 4 feet away. How about that?
So I got a stat for you here. Per Elias Sports, there's only been one starting lineup in the last 40 postseasons taller than the Mavs tonight. It was a 2003 Mavs lineup. Can you name anyone in that 2003 Mavs lineup in a playoff game that was taller than this
Sean Bradley.
Sean Bradley.
Dirk.
Dirk.
2003?
Yeah.
Michael Finley.
Michael Finley.
2003. Well, Nash wouldn't really add to the height, so we need another.
Nash is there.
All right, so I need one more really tall guy. Let me think.
He's a foreigner.
Oh, he's a foreigner. He's a foreign guy. Let me think. Who else would have been?
I don't know
in
if you're gonna pull this name out of the sky, Mike.
Let me think.
You probably haven't thought about this guy in a long time.
He's a foreign guy.
Do you want me to give? Well, I want to verify this. Give me his country of origin.
Yeah, you got his country.
Hold on, let me just get it. I want to verify it before. That's even worse. He looks like it's a foreigner name, but he's American.
Okay,
I would have thought for sure.
Can you give me a college?
He went to. Hold on. I'm looking this up. University of Kansas.
That is, what's his name? Greg Ostertag.
No.
He played for the Jazz. Kansas. And you thought he was a foreigner. Man, I'm drawing a blank.
He's from Iowa. Went to Kansas. He played 4 years at Kansas.
He got drafted by the
Nuggets.
I'm just going to tell you. Yeah, this is we're wasting way too much time.
Rafe LaFrance.
All right.
If you saw that name, would you expect him to be American?
Well, I mean, I knew Rafe LaFrance was American, but I obviously didn't know that he started for the Mavericks. So anyway.
Anyway, so that was the tallest. That's the only lineup that's been taller than the current one.
Okay, and fair enough.
Some things are standing out. Like obviously, Doncic is really good, Kawhi's looked good tonight.
Kawhi's been great, by the way. He's been great in this series.
Yes, he's been great. He's been about the only thing that's been great for the Clippers, and that's why the series is tied 2-2. Although Pandemic P showed up for a few games, I don't know. He's been good.
I don't know what he's done tonight. Let me look. He hasn't done a whole lot tonight, I don't think.
I haven't seen him do much.
4 of 9. He's got 13. So I guess he's leading them in scoring at this point. But
yeah, really, Kawhi doesn't have 13 points.
Kawhi has 11 right now.
I would have thought
Kawhi's got 11.
Oh, Boban's gonna get a little stronger there. Anyways, this game is interesting. Obviously, I was hoping that the Mavericks were gonna blow them out, and it was gonna be, but it's gonna be a game that I'm gonna stay up and watch the whole thing of because there's no way it's not gonna come down to the last few minutes. Just hope that it doesn't go to triple overtime. Like like last night, or double overtime
At least that Denver Portland game didn't start at 10:30, so that was the saving grace there.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the 10:30 game was over at halftime.
That is true, 100%. So I don't know if you have anything you want to say about this.
This series has boiled down to Luka's health. I mean, the first two games, the Clippers had no answers for Luka. Then they go back to Dallas, and Luka gets that neck injury in whatever the first quarter of game three, and he just isn't himself. Now, he still played decently, but clearly was not doing what he had done in those first two games. And then the rest of their roster just wasn't, you know, didn't knock down open shots the same way he did in those first two games. And just like we talked about with Portland and Denver, if the supporting cast doesn't play well, it's really difficult for Dallas, Portland, or the Nuggets to be able to win, because they just don't have, I guess, you know, depending on what you think of CJ as far as him being a star, although I don't think he's ever been an all-star. So you're looking at none of those other teams have a secondary guy that you can say, well, if our star has an off night, they're going to get it going for us. So if Luka doesn't play well, it's not like, okay, Dorian Finney-Smith is now going to go for 36 and we can run everything through him. I mean, everything runs through Luka. If Luka's not playing well, Dallas isn't going to do anything. Denver, everything that they do runs through Jokic. Portland, most of what they do, I guess there's maybe a little bit because you can rely a little bit on CJ, but 95% of what success Portland's going to have is going to be because of Dame Lillard and what he's able to do on the floor. And so it comes down to those guys playing well. Now, Luka's playing well tonight. The question is, can he overcome the Clippers, who have tonight at least balanced scoring, and Kawhi and Paul George are at least playing, they're at least capable of playing well together. And so you have two guys that potentially can overcome that one transcendent performance from Luka if his role players and his other guys on his team aren't doing a whole lot. So this game's going to come down to the wire. I think, in all honesty, this game five, I think whichever team wins this, I think wins the series. Because if Dallas wins it, you're going back to Dallas. Presumably, if Luka stays healthy through this game, he's going to have to carry them. They'll have confidence going into game six at home. Conversely, if the Clippers win this one, then they only have to win one out of the next two. And I think they're a great front-running team. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers win this one, that they go back down to Dallas and win game six. But if Dallas can somehow win this game, I think Dallas wins the series. So I think this is the pivotal game, this game five. I think whichever team wins it ends up winning this series. It's just been, in all honesty, again, it's come down to the whole thing is hinged on which Luka are you getting. And I guess tonight if the Clippers win, they're going to beat Luka at his best, because so far he's been scintillating to this point. So I mean, if they win tonight, you're beating them on a night that Luka's been at his best, at least up until this point where we are, which is with about 7.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. So,
yep, I agree. All right, I don't have anything else to say, Mike, other than you saw Krzyzewski's retiring after next year, right?
I did not see that.
So Krzyzewski's retiring, and they already announced his successor is going to be Shire.
All right, there you go.
Who played for him? So,
all right. The other thing we forgot to mention last week or on our last show was, our condolences to the NBA family and Mark Eaton. That was sad to see when I saw the news come across that Mark Eaton had passed away. And at first there was there was nothing associated with the what, why, or how. And then later it came out that it was a bike accident that he had passed away. And I haven't heard any more details about it, but it was like he was found by himself and they didn't think there had been a vehicle involved, that it was just somehow he had crashed on his bike. But condolences to Mark Eaton and his family. And, it's sad to see a guy that, watched him play a lot of basketball over the years. So our condolences to Mark Eaton's family and, rest in peace, Mark.
I have to say, I don't think I watched Mark Eaton play basketball. So, but rest in peace.
That was probably before your era, but nonetheless, one of the guys who was a giant of the game in more ways than one as a 7'4" dude. So again, condolences to Mark Eaton and his family. So nonetheless, We have a lot of good NBA basketball to continue to look forward to both tonight, the rest of this Clippers-Mavs game. We'll see how it turns out. And we have a lot to look forward to. I think that Bucks-Nets series is going to be epic. It's going to be a lot
Saturday.
Of fun.
Start Saturday, by the way.
Yeah.
Mike.
It's going to be it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that series.
We might have to do a pod Saturday night after the first game. They play it, you know, we might have to talk about what we noticed after game one and adjustments they could make. So,
That could be good. That could be very good. It is now 1:15 a.m., and when Jason and I finished recording our NBA episode tonight, the Mavericks and Clippers game was not finished. It was just into the third quarter, I believe, when we wrapped up. And at this point, the game is finished. And the Dallas Mavericks hold off the Los Angeles Clippers 105-100. And Dallas had a big lead going into the fourth quarter. And their offense kind of shut down. Luka was, I guess, pretty average in the fourth quarter. But finished with 42 and 14, and was back to the Luka we saw in the first two games. And we talked about it during the podcast that if Luka is going to be Luka, it makes the Mavericks that more formidable. And I think that Dallas probably goes on to win this series. We said during the podcast, I mentioned that whatever team wins game five, I thought would go on to win the series. And I certainly think Dallas is going to go ahead and win this series. The Clippers, man, got some issues. The last 8.8 seconds of the game, you get the ball to Kawhi in the corner, and he forces up a bad three that is an air ball, doesn't hit the rim. And you got to get a better shot than that. In that case, Paul George, last 3 minutes, had a couple turnovers, cost the Clippers a couple possessions. They had a fast break situation where Terrence Mann has seemingly what looks like a layup at the rim, passes it to Nick Batum, who proceeds to take the shot up, get it blocked, doesn't finish. Kawhi and Paul George are standing out at the three-point line, wide open at that point. And it just seems like the Clippers, whatever it is, they just don't have it. After winning those two games on the road, seems like, hey, they've righted the ship and they're ready to go. Then they come home and they just don't get it done. And Luka gets 42. Going home now to Dallas, I expect the Mavericks to finish this off. And then we'll see where the Clippers end up this offseason and what ends up happening. And Dallas will move on and get an opportunity to play the Utah Jazz, which should be a very interesting series if and when it comes to materialize. So Dallas Mavericks 105-100 over the Clippers in game five. And I would expect that Dallas is going to win this series in six. So just wanted to jump on and wrap up that game because it did finish before we were completed with our recording. So thanks for checking us out tonight, and we'll catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.